Off the ball on News Talk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.
Hello there, you're welcome along to Monday evening's Off the Ball. It's Joe here. We have Andy Lee in studio just after 8 o'clock talking Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, split decision draw in LA, an incredible finale to the fight. We will talk in depth with Andy, who was ringside for Five Live. That's coming up after 8 o'clock. Arsenal and Liverpool both feeling pretty good about Derby Day. Gary Breen coming up around 7:30. Pat Nevin on the way just after 9. And Rory O'Connor on Monday Night Rugby as well. It was a bit of a down week in some respects. Pro 14 action. Routine wins for the Irish sides over the weekend. So Rory will join us between 8:30 and 9 or so to talk about all that. Champions Cup is on the way. 53106, the text number. We are at Off the Ball. Richie is here in studio. Hello.
How are you now, Joe?
And Ronan is here as well. Hello.
Joe, how are things?
Fresh off watching Tyson Fury against Deontay Wilder, I suspect, Ronan.
Yeah, it was. It had that big fight feel. I really enjoyed it, and it kind of played out as most people expected it to, maybe the 12th round excluded.
I feel robbed, really. I feel robbed of this event because it turns out that watching it back, as I did this morning, when you know everything that's going to happen, certainly takes much of the tension away. For instance, the first six rounds, so I knew that generally the consensus was that Fury should have been given the vast majority of them, and I was expecting to see him completely outbox and outclass and be streets ahead of Wilder in those opening rounds. And actually, in my very limited opinion, not much seemed to happen. I accept that maybe Fury shaded them, but not much happened. Mm. And then the worst part was the 12th, where everybody who watched it had an almost religious experience watching him rise from the ashes. I was just waiting for him to get up because I knew he would.
No, it's funny watching the fights back in that way. It's an interesting experience, all right. Like the first six rounds, the intrigue in the fight was almost the notion that Fury could get caught.
Totally. I mean, look, the first six rounds, if you think that at any second, and you would have thought that if you were watching it live, at any second Wilder could throw a knockout punch at any moment, then that changes the complexion of watching those six rounds entirely. Mm. I watched them thinking, something's going to happen here.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I've been
a bit harsh on them.
I got up on Sunday morning. I didn't know the result. Okay. And I actually managed to avoid, in my early scans online, what the result was. Mm-hmm. And watched the fight and was generally entertained by it. I thought it was more, like, I know you're saying that not a lot happened in the opening six rounds. I actually found them more entertaining and more engaging than a lot of the fare that we've had at heavyweight division, particularly over the past number of years. I thought it was actually a really engrossing, really engaging fight. I put aside the fact that I don't particularly like either man involved, and there was one outcome that I would have preferred to see rather than another, but, you know, I thought it was a decent heavyweight fight for what it was.
No, don't get me wrong. See, I turned it on with huge expectations that this was a fight for the ages. This had reawakened the heavyweight division like no fight since I don't know when, even better than Joshua against Klitschko. So just when you had all the hype and all the expectations, nothing could have happened in that fight that would have made me excited. You know, it was a lesson learned.
You're a cynic, Joe. That's the problem.
The lesson was, make sure you're going to watch these fights live.
Browbeaten by cynicism.
That was the lesson. Make sure you're going to watch them.
It's interesting that, like, a lot of people's perceptions of the fight have now been coloured by the final round.
Yeah.
But I take your point fully that a lot of it, while I was watching it, this is very one-sided. And Fury's just ticking off these rounds as he goes. And as I said before, the intrigue for me was, I know Wilder's not in here for a points victory. He's in there to knock him out. And that possibility's open for 36 minutes here, as it proved. And people are putting in the pantheon of classic fights. I wouldn't be as quick to do that. Mm. There were some brilliant moments, but the Joshua Klitschko fight had two Olympic gold medalists, so people might deride that as a bit of a slugfest, but you have two high-level technicians there, and there was a lot more what you might call drama.
Incident, I would have said, The knockout in the 12th was still extraordinary, and Wilder has said he saw Fury's eyes roll back in his head, and Wilder even kind of put his hand across his throat as if to say, it's done, it's over. And we've already talked to Andy Lee, who was in earlier, fresh off the flight. And we streamed that, have we, JP? Streamed that out?
Yeah, we did.
People will have seen it on Facebook already, potentially. And so Andy says that the referee would have totally been in his rights to just, we're done, we're out, as soon as the punch was thrown and Fury hit the canvas. But he gave him his chance to get up. And there have been some accusations from the Wilder camp of a long count, you know. And certainly, I mean, it was 8.5, 9 territory by the time Fury seems to get to his feet. But then the referee did an interesting thing where he said to him, I'm almost still not convinced here. Take a walk over here for me.
It seemed he had a 13 or that kind of direction to get himself together and out there again.
But apparently Andy was saying that happened in some of the fights in the undercard, that the referee in those fights, it must be a California commission thing, whereby you almost say to them, before you put them back in harm's way, right, just, okay.
You give them the drink driver test.
I sort of. Yeah. Walking a line from there. I can see you're standing and you've got your gloves on my shoulder, as Fury did, but just walk over there, and then Fury almost danced over. And the really extraordinary thing was that Fury won the round from then in.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he should have been against the ropes with his hands over his head saying, let's try and get to the end. But, I mean, 40 seconds later, he's got his tongue out and he's putting his hands behind his back and he's putting the pressure on Wilder. And he's had 31 months out of the ring, bar the two exhibitions that he fought over the summer. And he's lost 10 stone for the fight and he's been in the throes of incredibly deep depression, on the brink of suicide, in his own words. Alcohol addiction, drug addiction, and is there in the 12th round against Deontay Wilder and is coming on strong.
Yeah. Though the Jack Reyes point, the referee, is an interesting one, because it's definitely a growing trend in boxing these days where it's better to be safe than sorry. Referees will often jump in even while the fighter's on their feet just to call the fight, some would say prematurely. And I'd be in the camp, I agree with that, you know, it's better to be safe than sorry. And if the referee feels the fighter might take undue punishment, call it where it is. And I was expecting, when I saw him get down on one knee to look at Tyson Fury, I thought he was going to wave it off. But Jack Reyes, for people who aren't familiar, is kind of like, he's like the Mickey character in Rocky. So he's this old school guy, would have been brought up in traditional boxing circles. So he kind of wants to see a conclusive ending. And that would be quite typical. Once the fighter gets up, they might say, who are you fighting? Or what's your name? What arena are we in? Just to see how they're with it, totally with it. And it was an interesting one. It was kind of like, just to see what Fury's... Did he have his wits about him, basically? And he knew Fury only had to negotiate another 2 minutes.
Yes, yeah.
And I'm sure Reese probably thought, although he didn't have a say in the final ruling, that Fury was miles ahead on the cards. He didn't want to necessarily take it away without giving him a chance.
Yeah, in the end, by the way, the judge who's drawn the most ire is the Mexican, who gave it 115 to 111 in favour of Deontay Wilder.
He'd never want to encounter Paulie Malignaggi as long as he lives.
Yeah. I did. Why is Malignaggi?
Oh, yeah. He ought to never work in this business again.
Right.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Okay. So. The British judge gave it 113 to 113.
Yeah.
A draw. Now, Andy earlier was saying maybe he almost felt a responsibility not to be biased in favour of the British fighter. But even they found that very surprising. And then the other judge gave it, I think, 114 to 110 in favour of Fury. Yeah. Andy Lee certainly used the word robbed. Thought it was a scandal, the Mexican judge's decision. So it looks like we're headed for a rematch. There's talk of Las Vegas in the springtime.
Yeah.
How's that shape? Does Fury automatically become a relatively firm favourite there, or is there still just the constant threat of a Deontay Wilder punch getting through and ending the fight prematurely? I don't think that's going to change.
Yeah, I think those cards will always be on the table, but Fury's the one who can improve more so than Wilder. I don't think Wilder's kind of, he is what he is at this point, whereas I think Fury was probably 60% fit the other night.
Yeah.
And just by natural gym work, getting more in tune with Ben Davison and the Freddie Roach Ricky Hatton dream team that he seems to have cooked up there.
Last minute almost.
Yeah.
Dragged those lads in. Like Freddie Roach, the most knowledgeable cut man in the world, probably is having your corner.
Yeah, and Ricky Hatton almost in a cheerleader capacity. But like all three of them were adding, like I think Tyson Fury, people are maybe giving Ben Davison a little too much credit. I think Tyson Fury was calling his own shots basically.
Yeah.
And Ben Davison was kind of giving him an outside perspective. But Fury, I would have been interested if Fury had taken a heavy knockdown and then gone back to his corner, what instructions he would have gotten. But the knockdown he suffered earlier in the fight was more of a flash knockdown. He sort of had his wits about him and finished strong in that round as well.
Wilder versus Fury was more power versus technique. If you want action movie type explosiveness, stay tuned for Chisora versus White, says Sam.
Yeah.
And does Wilder really want a second portion of the schooling he took from Fury? I can see him arguing his way out of a rematch over the next few months. Reckons Mark in Wexford. Penny for Joshua's thoughts watching?
If I was Wilder, I certainly wouldn't take the fight again.
Would you not?
No, I think I'd put all my chips on the table to go for the Joshua fight now because he's more of a chance of taking Joshua out. But again, on the flip side, Joshua has more of a chance of taking him out. So it's more of a classic slugfest.
So you sense that both Joshua and Wilder will want to avoid Fury?
Well, he's the who needs him club. Like, it's probably the least lucrative of the fights on the table, and it's the trickiest assignment. I think the way heavyweight boxing works out, they can all sort of beat each other, which is the beauty of it now. It was always the Klitschko reign endured for so long that it was going to take a home run shot to knock him out, whereas you can see flaws in each fighter.
Yeah.
And like the talk is that Wilder and Joshua had a deal sort of agreed in principle. They were circling the wagons a little bit to try and get that done for April. Mm. And Dillian White's sort of the reserve. He has to come through Chisora, but I expect him to navigate that one okay. So I still think Wilder versus Joshua is a live possibility for April. And the notion that Joshua has to travel to America is going to be put on the back burner somewhat after judging the other night.
Put it this way then, three men in a ring, Royal Rumble style. Who wins that one? What can we do to make that happen?
I'll always put Joshua number one. I just think...
Really?
Yeah.
Well, if you can bend the rules enough to get Fury back in the ring as soon as he had been, then surely we can make that three-way happen.
Yeah. Fury is almost certainly going to lose a bit more weight, or certainly tone up. There was some eye-catching extra weight there. Yeah. You know.
The immortal words of Alan Partridge, he had a fat back.
It's a credit to him that he managed to keep going, really.
I just hope he can't be fit.
I
hope he just keeps on the straight and narrow from a boxing sense, whatever about his social life, I'm sure. But from a boxing sense, just keep active and keep fighting. Even if the Wilder fight doesn't materialise, take the next best guy, just keep active. Because a prime Tyson Fury is something to behold. He's a brilliant boxer at that weight. It's sort of unheard of for a big man like that to move the way he does. Mm. So...
The news round is brought to you this evening with Screwfix.ie, championing the trade, a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products. Richie, you're starting with Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, he has until 6 p.m. on Thursday to respond to a Football Association charge of misconduct. The Liverpool manager facing sanction due to his celebration of his side's injury time winner in yesterday's Merseyside derby, which was live, of course, on Off the Ball. Klopp ran onto the pitch to celebrate Divock Origi's 96-minute winner. And speaking after yesterday's game, Klopp said he'd already made... known his remorse for his actions to his Everton counterpart Marco Silva.
Immediately after the game, I apologised to Marco Silva because when we spoke to each other, and I told him how much I respect his work because it's incredible what he did with that team. They are just an outstanding side. It was a really difficult game today. Derbies are always difficult, but today it was a completely different difficult to the last few years. And what can I say about it? I didn't want to run. It was not my plan. I didn't want to run to Ali. I couldn't stop, obviously. So, and not cool, but happened.
Suddenly, Everton have become a very slick footballing team under Marco Silva. He's done an amazing job there. The Jordan Pickford mistake for the goal. Bizarre goal, obviously. I was watching on Match of the Day. Mark Chapman was ably trying to give Pickford a bit of a break and saying... Like, would you, to Ian Wright and Alan Shearer, it was difficult though. You know, it was tricky. Mm. The way it condemned the bar, and they were saying, no. It was a horrendous mistake. Why did he not try and tip it over the bar?
But he was caught between three stills. He was clearly in one part of his brain not wanting to concede a corner at that stage in the game with that many big lads that Liverpool had on by the end of the match. And then also, he's thinking, palm it down, gather it, move on from there. And he makes an absolute hames of it between the two notions. Ends up passing the ball essentially to Origi, who's lurking and nods at home. I'd be really, really, really reluctant to pile on Pickford for that one. I just think it was a, like when you say momentary lapse, a split second lapse at
tricky.
That point in the game.
It was a freak kind of thing to happen. But the fact he went up with his two hands in hindsight looks terrible now. He just had to tap it out for a corner.
But look at Van Dijk.
I can see how he made the mistake.
I don't know if you've seen Van Dijk's reaction when he plays the ball in. Van Dijk,
when he slices the
ball in, turns away going, balls, I made a hames of that.
Yeah.
And then it just starts to spin back enough that Pickford has to think about it. And again, like I say, he's caught between two minds. And what happens, happens.
Yeah. Daniel Sturridge?
Yeah, he's been granted an extension to respond to his FA charge for allegedly breaking the rules around betting. The striker now has until February 11th of next year to answer the charges, which he maintains he denies.
Lads, a couple more fights under his belt. Nobody will want to take on Fury. He only fought two bums after a long layoff. And look what he was able to do to Wilder. They can only run, not hide. He will have his belts back, says somebody.
Not Tyson,
I don't think.
My belts.
I mean, the worst part of Tyson Fury's comeback is you having to do, at least I would reckon, in the vicinity.
You suffer it in the office more than you do on here.
25 to 30 impersonations of Tyson Fury.
It's between Tyson Fury and Mick McCarthy being in the news.
I do encourage you to do it.
Methodical. They all are.
It seems that not being able to beat Manchester United these days is a sackable offence.
It is indeed. Mark Hughes today became the second Premier League manager to lose their job this term. A run of 10 Premier League games without a win.
So He got paid £6 million quid today.
He did.
Mark Hughes.
It was Ed Ahrens from The Guardian pointed out how much money he's received in compensation over the course of the last 4 or 5 years. If it's worth hunting down, it's...
18 million.
18 million.
Yeah, it's not bad work.
There is that moment, you know, you go home and say, okay, bad news, honey, I've been sacked. Good news is we just made £6 million in a day.
We're doing nothing. You know. Put our feet up.
And I'm almost certainly still on the managerial merry-go-round as well.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I mean, like, it's pretty early. Things weren't going well, obviously, but you would have thought 2-2 draw against Manchester United is not...
That would have looked like an upturn to me. I would have thought there you go. The most recent result of that 10 games without a win in the Premier League was that draw that has cost Hughes the job. It's been reported that Ralf Hasenhüttl has already agreed in principle to succeed Hughes in the St. Mary's hot seat. The Austrian was in charge most recently of RB Leipzig. He was there for 2 years and led them to a second place finish in the Bundesliga in his first season in charge. It's Kelvin Davies who's in temporary charge for Wednesday's game away to Tottenham, and he's expecting an imminent appointment.
It's just about getting the lads prepared and hopefully in a good place mentally for the game on Wednesday.
Have you been given an indication as to how long potentially you'll be taking the team for?
Wednesday.
Just Wednesday?
Up until Wednesday, and then we'll see what happens after that.
Does that indicate perhaps that they're looking to make an appointment before the weekend's game with Cardiff then?
To me it does. To me, it does indicate that. Whether that happens or not is up to the guys upstairs.
Hasenhüttl has the reputation of bringing through young players, certainly did at Leipzig, so maybe that's good news for Obafemi.
Yeah, and that's part of his basis of his success at Ingolstadt as well, which obviously rose him to enough prominence to get that Leipzig gig. So for the likes of Michael Obafemi and even others within that Southampton squad, it could be good news.
Lads, on the subject of Sparky. Oh, dear.
Mark Hughes.
Give me your top five athletes' legs, please. I'm having Ray Wilkins for the perfect tan, Picamoles, the French number 8 for sheer mass. Any others, says Sean,
for
on
legs.
The stair climber.
Roberto Carlos's thighs were just not real.
Look, there's one winner here and one winner only, and it's John Mann.
John Mann.
Oh, yeah.
Case closed, end of.
Calves of a god.
I don't think we're getting into it, Sean, on the stair climber, I think is the
truth. We just have.
In no more depth than that. So where are we going next? Spurs?
Yeah, the FA have been busy today charging Arsenal and Tottenham with failure to control their players in yesterday's North London derby. The sides clashed following Eric Dier's equaliser for Spurs at the time. The FA say the team has failed to conduct themselves in an orderly fashion again. They have until Thursday at 6 to respond to those charges. The Republic of Ireland's Euro 2020 qualifying opponent Switzerland will face hosts Portugal in the Nations League semi-finals. That's in Porto on June the 5th. The other semi will pit England against the Netherlands. That's in Guimarães the following day, and Porto hosts the final on June 9th. Speaking at yesterday's Euro qualifying draw, New Ireland boss Mick McCarthy was asked about coming face to face yet again with the Swiss.
Back when we qualified for the World Cup, we had Portugal and Holland. Everybody wrote us off for that, and we didn't lose against any of them, and we ended up qualifying. So, you know, whichever group we were in, we're going to have to take it. But I think everybody's slightly relieved. I think that's a bit premature, and I think when you've got Switzerland in the group, who I think one of the best teams in Europe at the minute, and Denmark, who've been our nemesis, knocked us out of the Euros and then beat us in the Nations League, it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, Swiss 8th in the world, Denmark 10th. I mean, in the context of being in with Germany and the Netherlands for about 30 seconds, suddenly Group D seems lovely.
Yeah, do you know what? It's something that McCarthy always got lauded for when he was in the job originally, was that he'd organise the games or would try and get an organisation of qualifiers in terms of how they were played that would benefit Ireland. I mean, those qualifying for 2002, having Holland and Portugal away and getting a couple of points out of those, he looked like a genius after that. And again, getting Gibraltar and Georgia in our opening two games for this qualifiers is just a remarkable, not stroke of luck, but it's a really good play by whoever's sorted that out.
Well, I was under the impression yesterday, well, I was talking to Gary Breen, who's going to join us later on, before that was all decided, and I was under the impression that they still go into a room and negotiate and trade and try and figure out a map. But it seems these days it's just done almost by computer. It's just like banged out and some algorithm figures out who goes where, and
there is
it
some
done.
Degree of discussion involved as well, because you have to figure out that the likes of Switzerland and Portugal in other groups obviously were involved in these Nations League draws. There's other match days that have to be used, etc., in and around it as well. So I think there is an element of horse trading involved.
Still, yeah. Okay.
But getting Gibraltar twice in the first four games, like, and Georgia, hopefully, that's 9 points from 9, and it's a great platform from which to build. Like, 9 points from 3 games looks good, no matter what teams you've beaten. So it gets them off to a good start.
And takes the pressure off those first two, three max days they would have before the first game. That is tough to go in 3 days out and try and like put together a plan.
Say having Switzerland away before they play in the Nations League semi-finals, when Switzerland still, you know, have something to actually play towards here in this group. I mean, if we lose that, come home, play Denmark, lose that, like suddenly the mood music around McCarthy is fairly negative from the off.
Yeah.
Whereas now, as Ronan says, you've, you know, touch wood, 9 points possibly on the board by the time the big boys roll around. It's a decent looking prospect.
Yeah, we'll talk to Gary Breen in about 10 minutes time or so. He was at the North London Derby for us yesterday as well. It seems Arsenal really are on the cusp of something very, very decent. VAR?
Yeah, UEFA today confirmed that video assistant referees will be in operation for the aforementioned Nations League finals. And European football's governing body also today in Dublin rubber stamped VAR's use in the knockout phase of the Champions League from the new year. Jack McGrath has been ruled out of Leinster's back-to-back Champions Cup games with Bath. The Loosehead will miss between 4 and 6 weeks, having undergone a procedure on his hip. Robbie Henshaw will miss the first of those games at the Rec this Saturday as he continues to rehab a hamstring injury. Jordan Larmour, Dan Levy and Jack Conan, though, are all available to Leo Cullen. And it was a mixed weekend for trainer Gordon Elliott. Apple's Jade was a 20-length winner over Super Sunday in the Hatton's Grace Hurdle at Ferry House. And Elliott says the Mare's Hurdle at Cheltenham remains Apple Jade's best chance in the spring. However, despite going off 6-5 favourite, Sam Crowe was beaten in the Fighting Fifth at Newcastle. A late charge from Bouverdere saw the Barry Geraghty mount claim victory. There were no excuses from Elliott, who was speaking today with our own Will O'Callaghan.
No excuse whatsoever. Bouverdere was the best horse. We need a miracle to beat him in March, but it's horse racing and everything has to turn up on the day, so we'll take our chance.
I know you and the O'Learys were both playing down Sam Crowe in his novice year, while I think everyone else was getting hyped about him. Is there any concerns maybe about how he's ran the last two times now?
No, I think he went two very genuine races. As I said earlier on, like, it's sport, and you can't win every day. We want to win every day, but not every horse can.
And of course, the horse hasn't become a bad horse just because of a defeat. And Bouverdere, like, I can't stress how impressive he was, given it was his first run since Cheltenham.
Yeah, I think he's only been beaten once over hurdles, and when he was beaten, he was beaten by Alti Aramin, two very, very good horses. So he's a proper horse, yeah.
Does the plan for Sam Crowe say the same? He's not going to go chasing, is he?
Listen, obviously, everything is up in the air at the moment. I'll have a chat with Michael and Eddie this week, and we'll see. But at the moment, he's still retaining for Champion Hurdle.
Gordon Elliott there. A pair of Adrian Mullen goals helped Ballyhale Shamrocks secure a ninth Leinster Club hurling title yesterday. Henry Shefflin's charges ended the All-Ireland ambitions of Ballyboden St Enda's with a 2-21-11 point victory at Nawatch Cullen Park. Shamrocks will face Ballygunner in the All-Ireland semi-finals. That is on February the 9th. Elsewhere yesterday, Gweedore claimed the Ulster Club football title. They were 13 points to 12 winners after extra time over Scotstown of Monaghan, and it is Curragh Finn in the new year for Gweedore in the All-Ireland semis. Anthony Daly could be on the verge of a return to intercounty coaching. The former Clare and Dublin manager is set to join Neil Peddin's backroom team with Antrim. The Irish News report that the two-time All-Ireland winner as a player has been in regular talks with the Antrim board in recent weeks. It seems Liam Sheedy is believed to have been a convincing force for Daly, having worked in a similar role with the Saffrons in recent years. Cork City have signed goalkeeper Tadhg Ryan today. The former Galway United stopper will likely serve as Mark McNulty's understudy following the departure today of Peter Cherry from the club. While Shelburne have continued to build for the new season, signing Ryan Brennan. The 27-year-old spent last season at Bray Wanderers. And Alan Murphy has signed a new contract to remain in charge of Galway United. The club's record goal scorer took over from Shane Keegan in July, eventually steering them to a 6th place finish in the First Division.
That is your news round for this Monday evening. This Friday, December 7th, we're going to be live from the home of Dolphin Rugby Club. That is Musgrave Park for the latest Off the Ball Roadshow in association with Heineken Rugby Club. We'll be previewing Munster's Heineken Champions Cup clash with Cast at the weekend in the company of Mick Galway, Gary Halpin and some legends from Munster's 78 All Blacks team. The show is completely sold out, but we're going to give away the very last couple of VIP tickets this week to be in with a chance of winning. Just identify our mystery voice who wasn't impressed after he saw Kevin Kilbane, this is true, by the way. We were all watching it outside.
He makes a good one.
Cooking apple crumble on the 6 o'clock show. He can't say no. On Virgin Media this evening.
I can't relate to it in any way, shape or form.
The worst part is we asked Kevin this evening to talk about football.
I can't relate to it in any way, shape or form.
If you know how that is, text your name and answer 53106 for 30 cents. We'll give you a shout after the show. That's the latest Off the Ball Roadshow in association with Heineken Rugby Club. I haven't seen Kev Kilbane look as happy.
He got lauded for his crumble making.
Yeah.
He really did. Holly White was doing the cooking. So he got a thumbs up from her for his ability to mash in the butter.
We're not hurt here enough, the ball. We're just disappointed.
Just wish it was us.
I did sting.
The best part was JP's face when he saw it for the first time.
Yeah.
Just didn't understand.
Horrified.
Why is he not here?
What?
Why didn't he come in to save us?
I can only hope, Kev, you're in a taxi right now on the way home.
Bringing the apple crumble over here.
Feeling full of shame.
Did I enjoy making the apple crumble? You know, maybe I did, yeah.
It's not far off Tyson Fury.
No, Tyson's down here.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's not bad. So the plan this evening then, Andy Lee is will play it out after 8 o'clock. He was really good earlier on analysing the fight. That's on the way after 8. Then Rory O'Connor on rugby. Pat Nevin after 9 on the football show. We'll also bring you some Mick McCarthy at the convention centre over the weekend and some Seamus Coleman at Anfield yesterday. And next up, Gary Breen's going to join us. Back in a sec.
Off the ball on News Talk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.